My name is Linda Powell Jensen, and I lived in the mining years as a child. But the program today is about the early years of the village. And I have two DVDs that I'm going to show you that are done by the people that were actually here. The first one is called The Forerunners. And that is the work group that came in for 1 month only in 1961 to start the cleanup and take over the property. And what they accomplished in that 1 month time was incredible. And they also established the core values that we still have today. They had daily worship. They had some study sessions that were taught to them. They worked very hard, and they had some recreation and playtime. And those four things are still in the village today. So they've narrated it. I may interrupt once in a while to add a comment, but I'm going to let you see. This narration is from, they had a 25th anniversary, and the woman put together this program and narrated it. And again, I just say they did a marvelous job in what they accomplished in a month's time. The second program, the fellow was here in 2003, I think, and he thought he'd been a forerunner, and he was looking around, and he finally figured out he was here the second year with the group that he called them the Uplifters, but I subsequently discovered that they called themselves the Undertakers. And he went home and took his slides out of his garage and put together about a 12-minute presentation of some of the things they did. And they were here the whole summer. And some of the slides are in pretty poor condition because they were in his garage for that long a time. But it does give you a good story of what they accomplished and what they had to overcome to get this village started. And then the third one, I have combined slides from two sets of people that were here in the early years. Two of them were on long-term staff, and then the other was a family that came. And because they're lengthy, I just picked some pictures from both, and I'll provide a narration for it. So the first one we have is called, it's The Forerunners. And it's, what do I need to do? Click. Okay, well, I'll take the light off then. Oh, I got to remember to get it over here, don't I?
With the United States and Canada in 1961 to be the first group of campers to come to Holden Village. The average age of the work campers was 20. A few were seniors in high school. Most were in college or university. Several were teachers, one a cement mason, one a social worker. It was amazing how each one's background of experience, interest, and skill contributed to the common good. And this slide is a picture of Liz Lindholm, who hosted a forum for our 25-year reunion. We met at Lake Chelan the evening before the trip up the lake. Gil told us about Holden, and we could hardly believe that all that was there looking at the bare hills of Chelan. Holden is a place apart. The only way you can get there is by boat on Lake Chelan, 1,500 feet deep, a 3.5-hour trip on the Lady of the Lake, and 12 miles up the canyon by truck. Thus, it is a place apart where a person can unwind and see his life in a new perspective. There are no radios, no newspapers, no magazines, no TV. While we were there, there was no electricity, no hot water, no lights. I have never been anywhere from which, from the moment I arrived, I felt so completely apart from the world, and where I could so clearly see the world from which I had come and to which I would return. The village is magnificently located in the heart of some of the greatest wilderness in the world, 170 miles from Seattle and Spokane, equal distance from Eve.
They rode all the way up in this truck standing up.
The Cascade Mountains, which surround the village, tower to heights of 7,000 to 10,000. It is a region filled with glaciers, trout streams, and waterfalls, mighty forests, abundant mountain flowers, and deer and other wild game. There are many miles of hiking trails and unlimited opportunity for mountain climbing and horseback riding. The grandeur of the setting is unique. We were amazed to find Holden Village nestled in a narrow valley, surrounded by spectacular mountain peaks. Buckskin, Copper, and Dumbbell on the south, and Martin Ridge and Bonanza on the north. Our hearts were overjoyed by our first glimpse, and many eager adventurers found themselves exploring the village. There is something about the mountains, their size, their stability, their serenity, that makes you feel small, and at the same time secure in the hands of God. Here is a picture of Chalet 2, which has since burned down. Main Street gives a glimpse of the mountains and their snow even in the summertime, a view of some of the two-story dormitory buildings as seen at the right of Main Street. This was the hospital, which is now Agape. This is the old bridge that used to be there before a landslide came down one winter and took out the old bridge. The new bridge has replaced it. Here is a picture of the 40 work campers who first came to Holden Village in 1961 when we first arrived. This is a picture of us all dressed up ready to go back to civilization at the end of 1 month. Gil Berg.
That's also the way they dress for their Sunday services. Now think about that and compare to what you wear today.
A dedicated layman who is now the mayor of Holden Village and acting director was in charge of the work projects. Bertha Pearson was our able cook. Zelda was her helper. All our food was cooked outside on the stove that's now in the museum, on a wood stove outside Chalet 1. Reuben Thompson and Bugger, the dog, was the custodian. He spent the first winter alone at Holden with Bugger. Dr. Wilton Bergstrand, youth director of the Augustana Lutheran Church, was the program coordinator working with the Work Campers Council. We had two nurses, Fern and Marie. This is the picture of the staff. On the left is Professor Laris of Pacific Lutheran University, who was the biologist. Next is Reuben, and then Gilberg, Dr. Bergstrand, and Bertha. The forerunners, as we later decided to call ourselves, were organized into four groups of 10 members each. Each group was responsible for one of the four phases of the program. The teams were the devotional, recreational, cooking, and cleanup. We could easily see that there was much to be accomplished and that we could only perhaps put a dent in this great job. However, we all eagerly look forward to putting our shoulders to the giant wheel. Some of the boys went up on top the tailings and threw down pieces of wood that we could use that were on top of the tailings. Here's another picture of them throwing down the wood down toward Railroad Creek. In this place apart, we learned to be together. In peeling potatoes, washing dishes, washing clothes, raking, breaking a trail, cleaning, washing windows. In a thousand ways, especially in the company of sweat and dirty hands, the fellowship came alive and went very deep. The kitchen was and the dining hall was an incredible, well-nigh hopeless mess. In one place, we dug away and packed the grease 4 inches thick. Finally, the entire dining hall and all the equipment was gleaming clean. The last night, we held a banquet. in the dining hall, which gave us great satisfaction. We did many new things, like learning to use a crosscut saw, clearing trails and breaking trails. This was up to Copper Falls. One day, Gil asked us to rake the road from Holden to Lucerne. That meant taking all the rocks and things off the road so that trip by the buses would be free of hazards. Sometimes the rocks were a little big. And there were easy ways of doing this job. Much cleaning took place during this time. Everything had to be wiped down because there was dirt everywhere. We used many, many rags. Here is another one gathering firewood. And the guys go a little faster at the crosscut saw than the girls. This was our mechanic, Jim Felton. He was one of the truck drivers also. Some extra work hours were given to completing special projects. For instance, the cement mason spent 12 to 14 hours a day laying the foundation for the power plant. Generators were barged up to Chelan, and the guys went down to Lucerne to help offload the generators and get them on the truck. Then they were brought up to Holden Village, and they had to be slid into place. This is the generator crew. Another big job was repairing the dining hall chimney. It had all fallen down when we got here. You had some great views working from the top of the chimney. Here's another picture of the scaffolding working on the chimney. Dolores Bergstrand cleaned up the barber shop and became the village barber. Little wonder that the number of the fellows passed up the joy of shaving with a Gillette in the ice-cold water and grew beards. For us girls, we had to find a way to take a bath. Often the stream was the best way, although it was pretty cold. We had no lights at all in the village until the last days, when a group with its offerings brought a little portable light plant, which we called the QP, Quad Peak Powerhouse. Then the fellows fixed up a couple of old wash machines to the fireplace back of the chalet and built a wood fire, heating the water and then stirring the wash with a stick and rubbing it out by hand. One gets a new appreciation for the automatic washer and dryer back home. The day's schedule was something like this. Morning devotions at 5:45 was followed by breakfast out of doors at 6. The first work period was from 6:30 to 9:30. After a snack break from 9:30 to 9:45, the second work period continued until 12:15. Dinner was at 12:30. The afternoon was for letter writing, meditating, clothes washing, hikes, team meetings, and Bible study cell leader briefings. At 4:30, Dr. Harold Laris of PLU, our naturalist for the month, led us nature study on the bird life, the geology, the animal life, the trees, and flowers of the area. Supper was at 5:30, and Bible study was from 7 to 8, at least an hour each day. Dr. Bergstrand led the Bible study during the method. We studied the life of John the Baptist and the visions. This is how we came by the name of the Forerunners. One time we climbed up on Martin Ridge, all of us, to have a Bible study up on top of Martin Ridge. One evening, an engineer who had worked at the mine took us a mile into the mine. What a fascinating experience. The huge rooms, one finished off like a great arena, others as big as 5 football fields from which ore had been taken. We dropped a stone down one shaft and it was 23 seconds before we heard it hit water. It said there's another 4 million tons of copper in Copper Mountain. The tracks are now being removed from the mine and the entrance will be blasted shut. Even the three great piles of brown tailings from the mine, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, 3/4 of a mile long and 1/4 of a mile wide and 100 feet or more high, are an impressive sight. This is the opening to the mine as we saw it. This is a building that evidently the snow had collapsed. One of the things that we were aware of was the danger of fires, and we have a fire chief. Our fire chief is John Hill. One day he briefed the girls on the use of the fire equipment and later called a surprise drill. In 3.5 minutes, the girls had the hose laid out around house number 3 and had water pouring on a make-believe brush fire. Then the trouble began. In their enthusiasm, they ran the hose out too far for union with the first and had to back up. Liz Lindholm had failed to put the nozzle on correctly. And as a consequence, the water exploded all over everyone. Gail attempted to assist Liz and got a thorough soaking when the nozzle fell off. After 3 attempts to correct the situation, we learned that the nozzle just did not fit. The fellows from the men's team enjoyed the show very much and handed out much free advice as they photographed the humorous situation. When it was time for all of us to go home, we piled our clothes in the street, and some of them were totally worn out, and we had a clothes burning. The miners' village was there when we arrived. It was fun going through the miners' village. We found dishes still on the table and clothes on the line. This is a view of the miners' village as we saw it looking down from the 3rd level. The next picture.
There were 101 homes up there. And that picture shows a good majority of them. And they were nice homes. They were small, but they were individually built. It was called Winston Camp because Winston brothers built a lot of the homes. Some people built their own. But they were supposed to be burned 3 years after the village was left, but they ended up being there until 1963. So these people got to see them when they came.
Pictures are before and after pictures. 2 years later, all these houses were burnt by the Forest Service. And so we have some pictures showing before and after. This is one of the miners' houses with Bonanza in the background. This is afterwards. It's gone. This is one of the streets in the miners' village. This is after the houses were burned. We had some great overnight hikes. What a thrill to be hiking along a trail and have suddenly burst into view a mountain meadow or a snowfield or a series of waterfalls or a mountain lake or a snow-crowned peak. The hikes to Copper Creek Falls, to the top of Mountain Ridge, to Heart Lake, Lyman Lake, and Cloudy Pass, to Stehegan, the work campers will never forget. The early risers among the hikers prepared hot mush and thick slices of ham, which provided the necessary energy to conquer several thousand feet of brushy and snow-covered slopes. Our trail led us past Heart Lake, Crown Point Falls, and Lyman Lake, and finally our destination, Cloudy Pass. At this point, we appeased our appetites with ham sandwiches, dried prunes, and raisins while seated in an alpine meadow where there were vistas of mighty peaks, which thrilled us greatly. A snowy hillside invited our interest, and soon skiing became a must to many. This was a new experience, especially on the 4th of July. The snowy slopes, which had taken 45 minutes to climb, took but a few minutes to descend. For some of us, Image Lake with Glacier Peak in the background was the culmination of our hiking. The last pictures are pictures of the village as it was in the winter when the miners were. Some of these slides were given to Gil and he gave them to us. To see Holden Village is to be convinced of its great possibilities. Here for once the seeing is greater than the anticipation. We have yet to meet a person who has been to the village who is negative or even neutral about it. All are enthusiastic. I will end this with a verse to How Great Thou Art that was written by Dr. Bergstrand on a hike that we went to Heart Lake where the three waterfalls come down and meet. He wrote this verse to the song and gave it to us when we arrived back in the village. And with it, when amid majestic snow-crowned mountains, far from the city's press and fret and stir, I heard the rumble of cascading fountains and walked neath skies of blue and stately fir. Then sings my soul, Almighty God, to thee, how great thou art, how great thou art.
When I was up here in 2003, I think it was, there was a fellow came to visit. He thought he had been on the Forerunners, and he was looking for information in the museum, which at that time was up on the hill. And he finally figured out that he was part of the second work group that came in the following year in 1962. And he thought they called themselves the Upbuilders, but I ultimately found some literature that verified that they called themselves the Undertakers. And they were here the whole summer, but they benefited from the work that had been done by the Forerunners, which was, as you can see, the amount they accomplished in 4 weeks or a month was incredible. Because when the second group came, they had hot water in the dining hall and so forth. So he went home and put together a short, this is what is only about 12 minutes, but a short presentation of what it was like when they came the second year. Yeah.
Lake Chelan water churned up by the Lady Express during the 50-mile boat ride from Chelan to the Holden Dock makes one think of the churning going on in lives which the promise of time spent at Holden's place apart may call. Arriving at the Holden Dock and anticipating the 45-minute, 11-mile bus ride up the steep, winding mountain road to Holden. Departing from the buses in Holden, note the blue bus in the rear. 47 years later, I found this bus body used for storage while I rode up to the mine. Our 1962 summer work camp route. We came from Lutheran colleges across the U.S. and called ourselves the Upbuilders. After 47 years, I don't remember many names, so I'm not going to try to mention names in this narration. One of our first jobs at Holden was learning how to use the firefighting equipment. Note how well we are doing here. Don't aim too much lower or we'll be in trouble. Trouble happened. All the guys off the hose except for myself, who was hugging the hose in the ditch and hollering, shut the water off. Here's Main Street of Holden back in 1962. It did not look different to me in 2009. getting ready to go into the auditorium on Sunday morning for worship. Notice how everyone was dressed up. I found the dress to be much more casual in 2009. Here's the only picture I have of our worship setting. These slides were developed in different laboratories and stored in slide boxes for 47 years. Some of those years in an unheated garage. So you will note different coloring and quality, but I feel they still do a good job of relating what Holden was like in 1962. Looking up to the shillelaghs after worship. And down towards the schoolhouse. Bible study was an important part of each day during our summer. We often met in one of the chalet living rooms. Sporting events were also welcome, and volleyball was often played. And of course we had to do our laundry. But we had a big advantage over the 1961 Forerunners, as we had electricity, hot water, and wash machines. Meals in the dining hall were great experiences, thanks to the Forerunners for getting it all cleaned up for us the previous year. The women in our group had a fun time during their dining hall duties. As did some of the men. That's me, the taller one, looking back at the camera. For most of the summer, my work crew was assigned to the mine area. On our way to work, we would go across Railroad Creek and start our way up to the remains of the mill as it looked after a mine contracted crew had tried to get out usable steel. But they went bankrupt, and this is what they left behind. I was amazed in 2009 at what 47 years of growth had done to partially hide the mill and the mine tailings. We continued our trip to work up steps on the side of one of the three mine tailings. The views below were spectacular. In this picture, you see the building which now houses the village's composting operation. This is a view we saw on our way to work, which existed for only 7 months more. The married miners' village of Weston. Because the Lutheran Church could not maintain and use these homes, they were bulldozed into a huge pile by the U.S. Forest Service in the early spring of 1963 and burned, thus eliminating a dangerous forest fire hazard. Now we are ready to go to work. Our assignment was to clean up this area to make it safe to walk through. There was a lot of work to do. Fortunately, we have the aid of a pickup. And by late summer, groups could safely walk across this area to the mine entrance. A view of one of the mine tailings on the way back from work. Which we needed to walk across. That summer they were rather desolate except for the beautiful mountain scenery in the distance. After a hard day's work, we were ready to enjoy an evening meal outside of the dining hall. Other work involved building, and working on the trails. Here's a group of our men ready to start on a gloomy morning. And some of the women were willing to get involved as well. That's me digging out a pothole in the road with a pickaxe. Such physical labor enabled me to be in the best physical shape of my life that summer. Work on the trails also included some relaxing moments. I also served as a trail guide, taking some families for an overnight to almost 5 miles to Heart Lake. From what you see me carrying, I should have been called a pack horse. Meal preparation at Heart Lake. We work campers had some free time to hike to some beautiful vistas, such as this one overlooking the village. Or this one at Holden Lake. Some of the trails traversed rocky ground. To enable views like this, and this. Other trails went through alpine meadows. On the way to a spot like this. We also took a longer hike to spend a night by Lyman Lake. This was a scene when we awoke the next morning. After getting back close to Holden, it was good to dangle our feet in Railroad Creek. And to take a rest while a butterfly rested on a big toe. Is this the thinker? Here I am sitting on a rock and soaking up the beauty of God's creation all about. The time to depart from Holden came all too soon at the end of the summer. Our lives and Christian faith had grown because of our time spent there.
His slides are not of good quality, but I was working in the museum and he came up and he said he had some. He thought at first he was part of the first work group and then realized they were the second. And I asked him to go home and put some together because even though his slides are poor quality, it really tells the amount of work that those kids did in the first 2 years is just incredible, especially the forerunners. They were only here a month. And as he mentioned, they had electricity and everything. The other thing was they did take a lot of things out of the miners' homes, and many of the miners had signed papers when Holden Village became the property owner, allowing them to have things, because many miners left things behind. They were going, the company would take things to Chelan, but from there they were going to mines all over the country or different places, and it was awfully expensive. You didn't have much in your home in those days. So they just took everything with them. This third program I'm gonna tell you about, because I've taken two programs that people have done. There are DVDs in the bookstore, these two put together, but I'm gonna narrate it because I just took a little bit out of each one. The one program is, the lady does a lot of talking about who the people are from her church that's there rather than what we're actually seeing, which is kind of hard, you know, this far along, people are more interested in what you're seeing. The second one, section of the slides was done by two ladies that were here on long-term staff in, I believe, the 70s. Or early 80s, and they do a good job of describing what you're seeing. But this is a boat. Holden had its own boat for a while called the Happy Exchange. No, I gotta point back here to move it, don't I?
Oh, that one should just point at the computer.
Oh, this one should point at the computer.
It's not,
let's see if I can figure out how to, got it going. This is called the Happy Boat. And actually, Holden owned this boat for a while, and it was stationed at 25 Mile Creek, and then it came into Lucerne. This is a picture of it arriving at Lucerne. As you can see, a lot of the buildings were still here when they started operating. This is most of the mine buildings. This is snow on the ground. This is what the village, or the town looked like, pretty barren. Again, this is in early years. This is Carol and Mary Hinderly. Carol was the first director of the building, his wife Mary. And they set the tone that started. They started the summer themes. And the first year was something, I don't remember exactly what it was, but the second one set the fate, what we know today. The second year, their theme was Holy Hilarity. And there is a list of the themes tacked on the wall up by, in the corner of the VC, they have a little bit of museum stuff up there from the village years. And there's, and I just got the new one up with this year's theme on it. So you can see all the themes over the years. They've been very interesting. This is Wes Preeb and Carol Hinderly, and I always found it interesting that they chose to stand that direction because Wes was very short and Carol was very big and tall. And here they were doing some work out on the patio area. And this is a picture of the front of Koinonia. The little porch has been added. And there was a fellow asking if I had a picture with the dent, that metal statue in there, and I wasn't sure if I did. And I'm gonna find that man, hopefully. He's still here in the village, because I discovered I did have that picture. Apparently that was dismantled, and he has one piece of the metal from it, but it was taken apart and junked somewhere along the line. This is Chalet Hill in the early years. And this is looking down toward the schoolhouse. Now you've got some trees growing again. These are the bluebird buses. This must be in the spring because there's still a fair amount of snow there. And this is a picture where they had, at one time they had flower boxes all along there. There's still a couple of the boxes left, but it's harder. They don't have as many people to maintain anymore. And things change over a period of time, the same way in front of Quintanilla, the porch is on there and the poles are there and there are flowers there. And then for many years it was all bare road, and now the village has planted grass in front of those places again. This is a picture of the patio, and again you can see they have a place to hang flower boxes there too. And this is the picture of the ceiling that was painted in 1976. And they said the man that painted this, his name was Kammermeyer, laid on scaffolding on his back to paint that ceiling. So you can imagine what a chore that was.
Linda, he was an art instructor at Valparaiso University, and a couple of us.
Pardon?
Mr. Kimmerer, Richard Kimmerer, was an art instructor at Valparaiso.
Yes.
And he was an instructor for a couple of us.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you got to think about the guy laying on his back painting that whole ceiling. I mean, that was a job.
He was one of the ones who helped found the Grunewald Guild, that sort of sibling retreat center over in the Leavenworth area, too, where they do...
That's right. I remember that.
Arts, yeah.
Now, the fireplace was in here for a very short period of time, but they did have a fireplace, and the pit is still here. The problem with it was the smoke was so bad that it just interfered with programming. And when they started getting technology to do the slideshows and stuff, of course, the chimney was in the way. So it didn't last very long. But it gives you an idea of what it looked like in the early years. This is the dining hall. Again, the tables were hooked around the posts at this scene, and you'll notice the metal chairs. Still got a few of them up there. They don't make furniture like they used to. By the way, the lovely chairs you're all sitting on, many of those came from the poker tables. Well, they found a volleyball net and played some volleyball while they were here in the early years. And notice the windows on the school. When they the forerunners came in, the first they had, I think she said there was about 1,000 of those windows that were broken. And all the buildings have those little teeny square windows on them. That's one of the upgrades that the village has definitely made an improvement on. Here's the jacuzzi, but they only had one wall. But they got it going early on. And this is a picture of the river sauna. And you can see the tailings piles in the background. The tailings were really a problem for the village in the early years, because when the wind blew, the dust was all over the place. And something needed to be done. Interestingly enough, House Island was a pretty progressive company, and they did a lot of things in modern ways. And one of the things that had been looked at for the tailings was to pump the waste through pipelines down to Lake Chelan and dump it in Chelan. There's just a teeny bit of arsenic in there. And so there wasn't anything poisonous. And the lake at this end is so deep that it would have dumped down in. But they were concerned during the winter up here where they get a lot of snow, that if they had a break in the pipe while it was being pushed through, that would cause. So they ended up with the tailings piles, which has taken years to resolve, but it is now. And again, this is a picture looking across and that ugly old rack of a mine there. This is the winter transport in those days. They used the snow cap to get back and forth to the Lucerne. And here we are with the school buses getting ready to go, and you can see the plants in front of Koinonia, and the port shows on Koinonia. The loading dock has not yet been built. This is a picture of the chalets. It's kind of blurry. Again, there's lots of bushes growing up, but none of the big trees. And this is the start of the flower boxes, and they had that little signpost down at the corner when you come in across from where the stop sign is that said, had the different mountains on it.
Cool.
This is called the Ezekiel Quill, I believe, and it was in front of Koinonia. This group of slides, by the way, was done by Carolyn Schur and June Prange. The others were from Lorraine Schroeder's collection. Carolyn and June were actually here working on long-term staff. June said, Carolyn said, June took care of everything that came into the village. She worked in the registrar's office, and I took care of everything that went out of the village because Carolyn was the garbologist. This is a figure of a little rabbit named Kinnikin, and I'm not sure where he was placed, but he was in flowers near somewhere. You can see a piece of road in the back. And then this lady was on the nature trail that goes along the creek. And this is a picture of the where Copper Creek comes in. And again, you can see what a mess the early villagers saw. If you've been here before, the remediation looks quite different now.
Yeah.
And you can still see the buildings up on the third level there. And there's a picture taken, it looks like, from the miners' village showing the buildings on the third level. Nice afternoon. He was playing his harp out on the park. This was the garbology area in those days. Again, these are the early years. They were here in the early 80s. That's too hard, too fast. Okay, and we're back. This is it inside of Koinonia at Christmas time. And this is the new footbridge that was built by the village and stood for many years to replace the one that was here when they came. This is a picture of the parade. Everybody goes to the costume shop and finds costumes. This was getting ready for the dedication of the new septic system. I don't know if they still did today, but it used to be that any time they had a major event done, they had a dedication ceremony of some type. So these fellow were all sitting on their toilets on the end of the dock. And after they read their proclamation, there were people stationed around the village, so everybody flushed. That was the dedication of the new septic system. This is Sun Over Buckskin Day. A day of celebration, and again, you can see we have a lot of variety of costumes, and we have lots of sunshine in the snow. And here are people enjoying the snow up by Agape. Oh yes, the loading the garbo sled. Hauling everything up. And this is the winter jacuzzi after the walls were built. And this is another picture of Quinn and Nia later, and the poles are all gone, and it's clear. As you can see, things have changed a great deal. And between that time and now, the village has moved forward. But that's one of the wonderful things. This is a place apart. It's very unique. I don't believe there's any place else like it in the world, quite frankly, where you have to take a boat and a bus ride to get here. And the bus rides, by the way, are manual shift buses. But as you can see, they've changed a great deal, but the basics are still here. And I think that's the thing that's really important is you've kept your core, we've kept our core basics all the way through. They add a new theme each year. They're posted up above. And hopefully, eventually, that new museum will get built. There's kind of argument over what's going to be in it. I'd really like to see it retained as a museum because the village needs half of it. And the wild part and the Rio Tinto share, they can share a quarter or less. And the mine needs it. And I am really, really pushing that they need the little video room. We saw this up in Britannia Museum, and they just have a very small video room. They have 15-minute videos they run on a variety of subjects, and you can learn a lot of information about what went on at their mine from that information. So hopefully someday it will be built and it will be there for years to come. So thank you very much for your time.